Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Crandall. I've called an audible this week. For those of you who are not a member of Patreon, you're not going to know what that means because you clicked on this episode expecting Bob Tasca III, but I called an audible, and the reason is because I wanted to stay timely to what is happening right now. And what's happening is that Todd Gordon just wrapped up an impressive career at Team Penske, and he is stepping away from racing, and he's stepping away from that team after 10 years as a crew chief in the Cup Series, much longer in NASCAR. But Todd is ready to go do something else, and before he does that, he was finally ready to sit down and chat with me for the podcast, and we're going to reflect today, as I said, on that incredible career. So I wanted to make sure I got this out timely for you, so we've pushed back Bob Tasca to next week, but I don't think you're going to mind. Today is a great conversation with Todd. As I said, we're going to do some reflecting. Todd, I guess you would say, retires after 10 years as a Cup Series crew chief, at least. He started in 2012 with A.J. Allmendinger. Of course, Sam Hornish Jr. had to get in that car midway through the year, and you're going to hear that absolutely insane story of having to put Sam in the car at the very last minute in the summer Daytona race, and I'm going to let Todd explain that. And then Joey Logano came in 2013. You're going to hear Todd reflect on what that was like when Roger Penske wanted to bring Joey into the fold. Todd worked with Joey from 2013 to 2019, and for the last two seasons, he guided Ryan Blaney to four wins, three of which came this year, and it was the first time Ryan won multiple races in his career, and Todd was the guy to help him do that. Todd has 25 Cup Series wins in 355 starts. That includes the Daytona 500 in 2015 with Joey Logano, other iconic races such as winning the night race at Bristol in back-to-back years, and the Martinsville Clock. In fact, that Martinsville Clock came in 2018 at the end of the season when Joey and Todd and that 22 team were on a roll and took on the Big Three and Me storyline. Joey won Martinsville after a fantastic battle with Martin Truex Jr. to advance to the title race, and then he took down Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Busch, and Kevin Harvick, the three dominators, the Big Three, if you remember that storyline, that everyone said was the favorite, but it was Todd and Joey who came out on top in that championship. So we do reflecting on that, those iconic wins, special moments along the way. Todd also takes us inside what it was like Sunday at Phoenix leading into his final race, the people that came over to talk to him, one of which surprised him. He'll tell you all about that. He's going to tell us how he got to NASCAR, the moments along the way, racing in New York, building his own race cars, building zero-turn lawnmowers. That was fun to hear. And the decision that he and his wife Amy made to come down to North Carolina and focus strictly on working in racing, how he got to Team Penske, because along the way, he worked for some other recognizable names that you're going to know, you're probably going to chuckle at along the way, because he's got quite the history and resume of people that he's worked with. So a really great episode today as we reflect with Todd as he gets ready to go off, enjoy family life, and whatever else is next for him. So before he does that, once again, thank you for sitting down with us and reflecting. Here is Todd Gordon on the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm sure you're making the rounds this morning.
No, just trying to tidy up some things here. Just 11 years, you know?
It is 11 years, or has been 11 years. How does it feel, Todd? I'm sure that maybe more of it will sink in probably as we get closer to race season when you're not preparing race cars for Daytona and going through that. But is any of it sinking in as you take care of some things today?
Yeah, I think a couple of things, you know, through the weekend, you know, after the race, talking to Ryan afterwards, and he said, I don't know when I'll see you next. It was kind of odd, not really going to talk about upcoming things. And that started it. Obviously, team meeting in the holler was, you knew it was the end, the last one you're going to have. And then to come in today and see all the guys working on the next gen car, because they're getting ready to go test at Charlotte and with the new leader and on about their things and not being involved in it. It's fine. It's different. It's a change. It's not what, you know, what I've done for the last, you know, 10 years of Cup and 11 years here. But I'm looking forward to the challenges that come forward.
All right, take me back to Sunday. You just said there about the team meeting in the hall, or Sunday was a little different. There was no tech or anything because that had already been done. Qualifying was already done. So I'm not saying you guys had downtime, but it certainly was a little bit of a different schedule. Did that lead to people wanting to come visit you? Did you get a lot of visitors? Did you get a lot of people reflecting? What was Sunday like just leading into the race?
Yeah, I try to keep it as normal as possible, but it's not. I'm pretty cool when you know, people of the likes of Winston Kelly stopped by to say congrats. And if somebody I consider a true friend, spent a lot of time talking to on the MRN side. And he went through this last year and we had had discussions about the transition and pieces. And he kind of enlightened me with what he realized out of it. And, you know, we just talked back and forth a little bit. But yeah, several people saying congrats. Alan Gustin pulled me aside when we were picking pits Saturday. And he's like, all right, tell me about this. Because I just don't, you know, we're so embedded in the racing thing and always focused on what's going to make your race car faster and what's the next piece. And when you get to this point, he's like, I just got to understand what you're going through and just what you went through. And so we talked for 4 or 5 minutes before picking pits, and not somebody I normally talk to. Alan and I don't mean cordial, but not somebody who would come up with a conversation and start one with me, but it's been good. I think, you know, it's a transition. Definitely. 23 years ago, my wife and I moved south to pursue racing and working in racing. And now it's another chapter.
I do want to hit on a little bit of your journey here in a minute, but continuing with this about just, I guess, closing the book on this. Are you a reflective guy, Todd? Because you hit on a little bit there, which is when competitors are in the moment, when you're in your careers, it's very hard, I think, to have that big picture view and really, I guess, appreciate what you're doing in a sense, or really think about in the grand scheme of things, what it all means and the accomplishments. So do you think you'll take some time eventually to really sit down and reflect on the moments along the way and maybe the things you didn't think about as they were happening?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think, you know, and you to talk about that, first cup win, Michigan 2013, was pretty enlightening. And that was one that, in the week following, I figured out that you need to do things a little differently. I remember it, won Michigan, but I knew we were going to Richmond to test the next day. And all I worried about in victory lane was, how am I going to get springs out of this car? Because it's got to go back through different things. And what parts do we need to go to tomorrow? And really didn't just, you know, digest the whole moment and enjoy it. I said it was the worst victory lane I'd ever been to, really, in reflection, because it just, I spent it all worried about the next day. And when I came home and realized it, and you know, you get through the next test and you had a moment or two, it's like, you need to live those moments in the moment. And Sundays need to stay, once the race is over, you need to stay, you know, current to Sunday. And that was a teaching moment to myself, you know, just looking forward and not looking forward at those moments and actually just letting them soak in. And take the day to be that way. And then Monday, you can start worrying about next week. And since that win, the rest of them, I've taken the moment to really enjoy them and try to make sure that you do it with the guys that have been all part of this. And it's, you know, it's a journey of partnership and everybody working together. And it's been cool. I'm sure I'll reflect back at some things. I think more of what I'll reflect back at is, you know, and I think this is common for competitors, is I'll reflect back at those that got away and why they got away. And those are the things that you remember your failures better than you remember your successes.
I love the fact that so many people in this sport, that's such a common theme, is the memories of all of you guys, whether it's drivers or crew chiefs, you remember more vividly the ones that got away sometimes than the ones that you won. And that just fascinates me, that it just sticks. No matter how many years go by, those stick with a person.
Yeah, they do. And they're, you know, because you're always trying to learn. You learn from failure. You don't learn from success. Success is you accomplished, but you do learn from failure and you see opportunities and avenues of what you could do differently. And that's what teaches you. I mean, a lot of times you want every change that you make in the race car to be a good one, but the bad ones will tell you a direction not to go and eliminate paths that you don't want to go. So you got to try to make things better. And if you've made it in this sport, you're driven to try to be successful and do those things. You've got to understand the failures and how not to, repeat them.
You've had some great wins along the way, just specifically looking at Cup, the Martinsville Clock, Bristol Night Race, the Swords. Yeah, the Daytona 500,
yep.
Obviously the championship, but just in looking at your wins, what are some of, I don't know if cool is the right word, but again, you've had some significant ones in the sport.
Yeah, the moments that stand out, obviously the Daytona 500, I mean, that's just iconic, right? That opportunity to put the car into Daytona USA and have that whole presentation thing on Monday. That one, I'll say, you know, I'm a Clemson grad, Clemson dad as well, but I got a picture of us putting the car into the Daytona 500, Daytona USA, back from Dabo Sweeney and Dr. Clements from Clemson University saying congrats. That was pretty special. I framed that one, put it down in my game room. But you know those moments are big when you've got people like that offering a thanks back to you and a congrats back to you. The Bristol night races are iconic, as you talked about. And to do back-to-back 14 and 15 there with Joey, that was really cool. Probably one that it ends in probably the most bitter moment. But you go back to 15 and to win three races back-to-back-to-back. We won the whole round. Talladega, Charlotte, and Kansas. And really, we're in a position to win the fourth at Martinsville when we had our situation there with the 20 car. So, you know, those are just great times and enjoying all the people. And, you know, this year, really, really cool to win Atlanta. I love those high fall off racetracks. I feel like, you know, you have to play strategy. It's not just about being fast. It's about putting the whole package together. And wish I could have won at California. That's probably the one that hurts the most that I've never got a trophy out of. Had really good cars there at times, just not been able to execute the whole thing. But winning this year at Atlanta, the way Ryan did, the long run speed and driving by the five car on the year that he dominated, really, really cool accomplishment there. And to have my first win at Michigan in 2013 and to close out my Michigan career with Ryan bringing a trophy back with an awesome restart there at the end, pretty cool moment as well.
The 12 team, as you said, is preparing because the next season begins the next day, right? It never stops. How do you feel, Todd, just about the way in which you're leaving that team after 2 years with them and the way in which you've helped Ryan for 2 years?
Yeah, Ryan's done a lot of that on his own. I think this is a great group. And you say 2 years, but really when we did the driver swap, it was a driver swap. My car chiefs, my engineers, my mechanics, the truck drivers, basically the whole group that worked with me came along. And
yes, that's right. Yes.
So this group, you know, they're great. They're phenomenal. I'm really proud of getting this group together and just watching them be as successful as they can be and be the people they are. They're all great and they mesh really well. You know, Jonathan Hassler is going to jump into a situation here where he has a group that has a lot of chemistry and camaraderie and they don't have to learn each other. He's got to learn them and they've got to learn him. But Ryan and all the guys, they should be able to just continue forward. I think Jonathan did a good job here. He's been here longer than I have at Team Penske. So he's been in the mix and knows all the people and knows all the personalities. And I feel good about where this 12 team is. And I told everybody in the team meeting on the hauler on Sunday that I know we're not racing for a championship today, but I know you will. And I know you'll win one. So I think Ryan's got that in him. I think he's not at his 100% potential yet. And that's the really exciting part about it is that I got to watch him grow through some of it. And you see that coming in him. I feel very confident that Ryan will win a championship and it'll come in the next 4 or 5 years.
You have been very high on Ryan since the day it was announced you two were going to work together. And you said right there that maybe his 100% hasn't been met yet. What have you seen from him in terms of what you've been able to help him with in 2 years? But you also mentioned he's done a lot of things on his own. So in what ways did he rise to the occasion?
You know, the cool part was when we first sat down after the team swap and everything that was announced, he came to me with the list of things. Here's where I'm weak and here's what I need to work on and here's what I need help working on. And controlling emotion was number one on his list and that he could get excited in a race and that could get him sidetracked. And you saw the evolution of that through the last 72 races. He had good pace, but we get in situations and you'd see it start to come unraveled and then he gather back up. And I think part of that's just creating the environment. Josh Williams does a great job as a spotter with him. And Josh and I talk back and forth about how to kind of help him through that at times. And it's gotten to the point where he doesn't need to. As long as you've got that calm on the other side of the radio, when things do happen, it's a lap and Ryan's back focused in. It's almost like a pop-off valve. And that's cool. You see that growth in him. And I think understanding bigger picture and the longer picture, I think is something that he's gotten a lot better at, not being caught in the current lap and understanding that, you know, Atlanta, he said it there at the end. He said, I can't run with him right now. I'm going to take care of my stuff. And he let the five car go and didn't burn off the tires trying to chase him down, and knew that 25 laps into the run that he was going to have pace to go run him back down, and trusted in that and had enough mental bandwidth to process that and say, okay, I'm not going to do that because I know that 25 laps from now I can go ahead and run him down. And that's essentially what he ended up doing.
Before we reflect some more on the racing part of it, let's back up, Todd, and kind of talk a little bit about how you got here, because you've got a great story, as many people do in this sport. And I was going through some things and Googling and looking on Twitter, and the first thing I came across was Oswego. Their Twitter account a few years ago posted a picture of an article, a newspaper article, from when you won your first, was it modified race? Was that what it was?
So the first car I built when I was at Clemson, I built my first race car to race up there. It was called Limited Super back then. I'll go ahead, for those that don't understand the Oswego nuance, it was basically like an IMCA modified without a roof on it to look more like a super modified. So that was my first race car. I raced there for 3 years. I won once in that car up there and learned a lot. So raced Oswego for 3 years and then made the transition to go late model racing, build an asphalt late model and race that up in upstate New York for the next 3 years. Never won a championship, won a lot of races, but we were at the extent of what my funding was going to fund. And yeah, so that was when my wife and I decided to pack it up and move south. And the first year I was down here, it just so happened to line up that we had an off weekend in June and it was a late model event at Oswego. So we flew home and got to go race that race and got to win my last race as well. So my driving career started at Oswego and ended at Oswego, which is a pretty cool place. Both my parents went to school there, Oswego State, and actually my namesake kind of stems from that racetrack.
The reason I brought that up is because, again, that newspaper article was talking about your first win, and I'm hoping you have some vivid memories of that as you did Michigan, because according to the article, you won on a flat. Your car had to be towed out of there at the end of it. It sounds like it was a heck of a battle.
Yeah, it was. In fact, I ran into the guy that I beat that day at Watkins Glen this year. Dean Hogan and I had a good conversation, but Dean was really, really fast in Jim Paternoster's car. He was kind of the class of field, and he tried to pass me. And we had contact. He ended up wrecking out of it, but I ended up cutting a left front and at least puncturing a left front. It started going down, and with an open wheel car, you can see it because it looked like a drag tire. It'd get 3 inches taller down the straightaway and then shrink up through the corners. But fortunately, we went green from there to the end. And yeah, at the end, that left front was definitely down, but a pretty exciting win for me to kick off my racing career.
And you said there you built the car at Clemson, mechanical engineering degree. I'm curious, what class, what was that about where you get to build a limited super modified? That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was. So Dr. Harry Law was a vehicle dynamics professor at Clemson, pretty well renowned around the world, actually, as a vehicle dynamics professor. I worked for all the major auto manufacturers. But I'd taken a vehicle dynamics class with him, was going along. I said, I want to do a senior elective here and build a race car. And he thought it was awesome. There was three of us that were involved in the project. And I had to write a proposal to the department head and work through the processes there, but then work with Dr. Harry Law and on the processes of how we'd go about that. Wouldn't say I built the best thing to start with, but it's all iteration in processes. So I thought we'd build a decent car to start with and finish that up. When I started that process, my mom thought I was going to sell it when I got all done. She didn't realize I was going to drive it. So there were some harsh words when she figured out I was planning on racing, but I say that, and then she became my biggest fan and probably the biggest supporter. So pretty cool there.
So clearly by wanting to build a race car at that point, you were already all in with racing. That was obviously your passion. Was that something at that time that you kind of knew that's the path you wanted to be on?
I knew I wanted to compete. I didn't really fathom to me that I could work in racing at that point. I was just trying to get through the mechanical engineering thing. In the summers earlier in my career, I'd worked in a machine shop. And it actually gone to the racetrack supporting the engines that we'd built. So that's kind of where I got the bug of being on the inside instead of being just a fan. And that's what drove me to building the car and heading back that way. And you don't understand where you're going to end up. You just got to take advantage of the situations that are in front of you. And at that point, I just wanted to hop in a race car.
How long did it take mom to kind of come around on the idea of you wanting to race that car?
Yeah. We got to the racetrack the first time. She was all in. Her dad played semi-professional baseball. She's a sports nut. She's very competitive. So once we got to the competition environment, she was all in. It was harsh words while the building process was going on and realizing that I had a budget was going through and knew what I was going to do with it. When she saw a fire suit get ordered, that's when I got the phone call. So, but like I said, do anything for the process. And I don't think she ever missed a race.
Is it true, Todd, that New York native, is it true that you spent your time back then in New York designing zero turn lawnmowers?
Yeah, before we moved south, I ran new product development for Ferris Industries. It's a commercial lawnmower company. And when I went to Ferris, they didn't have a zero turn. That was my first design project. And then Bill Shea was the VP of sales there. He's still with Ferris. His son raced with me this week. And we got talking, you know, just about how the commercial lawnmower market and the commercial properties that you mow, how rough they are. And they're not as plush as your front lawn is. You take a lot more care in that than a commercial environment does. So, you know, we talked about how we could put suspension on them and actually work through that process and patented that for Ferris. And that's been us to this day, they're still fully suspended in all their zero turn stuff. So yeah, lawnmowers, anything that had wheels and motors I was into. So the lawnmower thing was pretty good for me.
And as you had mentioned before, your wife, Amy, was very influential in you moving down to North Carolina, really getting into racing, because you were doing still both at that point, from what I understand. You had basically a day job. You were working, but you're also in racing. And Amy was the one, from what I understand, that said, why not just go work in racing?
Yeah, that's the word. Instead of working and racing, how about working in racing? So change it from and in. And both of us were from upstate New York. In the winter times, the sun comes up after you go to work and goes down before you come home. So it gets pretty dark. And the waking up at 4:30 in the morning to see if you had any to shovel your way out of the driveway to get to work. Where we grew up was north of Syracuse, who was right in the snow belt. You know, that area averages a couple hundred inches of snow a year. So it's tough slugging up there. And we were at a point where we were married, didn't have any kids, didn't have a house. We were pretty mobile at that point and decided to move south and pursue things and really have enjoyed it since.
And before you become crew chief at Team Penske, as everybody will probably most know you for, let me read off some names here because it's quite impressive of teams that you've worked for. Phil Parsons, Joe Gibbs Racing, PPC, Baker Curb, Diamond Waltrip Racing. I think a lot of longtime NASCAR fans will recognize all, if not some of those names. When I read those names, Todd, does anything stand out from any of those times? And I'm sure that you probably, like many people, I would assume, probably started by somebody handing you a broom.
And if you talk to Phil Parsons, he'll tell you that story. When I finally got the interview with Phil, and it's kind of funny because back then, racing was kind of this circle and you had to figure out how to find your route into the circle. And fortunately, Keith Barnwell, who was a friend of my cousin's, it worked down at Diamond Ridge back then. Keith and I talked a lot and Phil was talking about a need and Keith said, hey, I got a guy that you ought to talk to. So I went down there and I told him all the things I could do mechanically and fabrication wise and engineering wise. And he wanted to know if a broom fit my hand. I said, sure. So that was my end. And it's one of the things that I think I've talked about through some of the things I've done with Clemson and profiles. But I think the biggest thing that you can tell people is you got to take the opportunity in front of you and make the most of it. And at that point, it was cleaning the shop and seeing where that take me. And really cool. That first year, I learned a lot with Phil's team. One of six or seven people there and we had to do it all. You go back to PPC Racing and Greg Pollock's and my history there with Jason Keller, who to this day is still a pretty good friend of mine. Got a lot of races with Jason, whether it be as an engineer, whether it be supporting him or as his crew chief. That's actually when you bring that through the great times and those times with PPC and following that through. Jason was why I went to Baker Curb. He made the move to Baker Curb out there in Nashville and we moved out to go with him. And that was a cool year of life to explore a different city and everything that goes on there. But when that kind of ended, coming back to Diamond Waltrip as an engineer, I think was good for me because it gave me a good understanding of the COT car and the Xfinity, then Nationwide side to kind of jumpstart into what was coming forward. So yeah, really, really cool. And the culmination of getting to work for Roger for 11 years. Everybody on the outside doesn't know Roger the way we do on the inside. And the persona you have doesn't even meet to what the person is. Roger's just iconic to me and such a guy of character, and his work ethic and drive and his belief in people, it's unmatched in my life. So very appreciative of the opportunity to work for Roger and everybody here at Team Penske.
Iconic, I think, is an excellent word to use when it comes to Roger Penske. So again, Todd, before you get to crew chief, what are some of the other roles you said there, engineer? What are some of the other titles you've held along the way in the sport that people might not know?
Yeah, I've fabricated. I started pushing a broom. I did a lot of fabrication work at Phil's. Got my opportunity. We need to put a quarter panel on a car. And I just started bending up some pieces for the guy that was doing it. And he was like, yeah, you probably don't need to clean the shop. So why don't you come on over here and start working? Which was good. As I said, you take the opportunity you got and work at it. You'll find more in the future. But been a fabricator, been a shock builder. Did that when I went to PPC to start with. I was building shocks and in engineering. And been a data guy. Because back then, you know, you're going back to the early 2000s, a shock guy and an engineer and data guy were almost all the same guy because you didn't do a lot of testing, but did those things. And I've set cars up at Phil's and worked on a setup plate with people and probably done about everything on a race team. And finally got my first opportunity to be a crew chief in, end of 04, I was Jason's crew chief the last two or three races, I think this season. So at PPC and then on into 05 with Michelle Jourdain. So I think I've had about everybody's job. I did not drive the truck, and that's I do not have my CDL, and I will make that clear so that I don't end up doing that. But those guys are pretty tough, the guys that get those things up and down the road.
The end of 04, let's talk about that. You work your way into racing. You have all those jobs. You're working your way through, and then it comes to, okay, you get to be a crew chief. You're promoted. You become a NASCAR crew chief. What was it like, Todd, then, the very first time you get to call a race as a crew chief? And as you said, it was with Jason Keller. Do you remember that? Finally getting to that position.
I do. And I still to this day appreciate that Jason didn't absolutely chew my butt about poor calls. But you think that you understand it and know it until you have to do it. And that was lesson by fire. But, you know, you sit on the right side of somebody and just be their engineer and try to give some input. It's a lot easier than when you sit down by yourself and you have to call the whole race and deal with the emotion of the race. And I learned a lot that first race. I probably made some poor pit calls, but you know, at the end, I got to, as I said earlier, you learn more from your mistakes than you do your successes. So learned a lot about that one and what we could do differently and what I need to do differently and how I need to prepare myself for it. And really was appreciative that the guys around me were supportive and didn't chastise me for mistakes and let me learn my way and help me learn the processes of being a crew chief.
You brought up Michelle Jourdain Jr. and I was going to bring that name up as well, because I was just like, my goodness, what a blast from the past. And again, he's somebody that's on your list of drivers that you've worked with.
Yeah. Michelle, he was really, really cool when he came over and great memories there as well. I think unfortunately didn't have the funding to kind of continue his career the way it needed to go, and tons of speed. It was really cool to go to places that he'd run champ cars and we run stock cars because the lines were completely different. I remember going to, there's a couple stories with Michelle, but first time at Atlanta and Andy Houston was spotting for us at that time. A great, great driver influence there and translator of what he needed to do. And we pretty much told Michelle with these Busch cars, you can run around here wide open. And he didn't second guess that once, just straight out there. And I think went to the top of the board first practice. And he stayed in the top probably five or six on speed all weekend at a place he'd never seen, but he was fully trusting in what Andy had told him and really cool there. I think ran very competitively all day and didn't have a set of tires at the end that some of the guys did. And NASCAR made some tire rules after that because of it, but cool event there. But we went to Milwaukee, which was a place that he'd run champ cars and took Jason Keller with him, got Jason to go out in a pace car with him and just talk him around it, because Jason, as I said, friend of mine, a true friend of mine, and one that had run pretty well in Milwaukee. Most of the short track places, and Jason's telling him where lift points are and lines, and Michelle's like, well, let me show you where we drive around here in a champ car. And Jason came back, said, don't ever let him do that. It just, I've gotten texts from Michelle in the recent months, even. He still reaches out every once in a while. We don't talk a ton, but it's really cool to have the reach outs and keep touch with those guys.
That's awesome. Moving to the Cup Series, 2012, AJ Allmendinger is the driver, you and the 22 team. You start the year, everything's going. It's going
all right. Yeah, yeah. It's going all right.
And then Daytona and the suspension. I don't want to get too much into that because AJ's talked about that in his history. But as the leader of that race team, Todd, I'm very curious, how do you handle something like that when suddenly your driver is gone? Here comes Sam Hornish, does an excellent job with what he can. What was it like, again, as you, the leader of that race team, having to navigate just everybody through that?
Yeah, I remember getting a text at 4:08, I think it was, come to the Penske bus immediately. I was like, oh my God, what I do wrong? I mean, I've never gotten that one. So I'm trying to think through everything that, what could I have done wrong here? Oh my goodness. I got out there and they explained the situation to me. I'm like, all right. So then we started going through the scenarios and it was Sam's probably our best bet. Fortunately, the Xfinity interior guy, Daniel Lynch, who's been with me on the 22 and now 12 team since that point, I brought him over the following year, but I knew him from the year before when I was in the Xfinity car. And so Sam was on set of Race Hub and we couldn't get him on the phone. So, I mean, Walt tried to call him, Walt Zarnicki, and Travis tried to call him. We finally had to, somebody had to call somebody in productions at Fox and say, hey, get Sam on the phone, please. So while that was going on, I had Daniel, I called him up. I said, hey, what are you doing? He said, well, just getting ready to watch the race and enjoy it. And I'm like, well, don't enjoy it. Go to the shop, start getting a seat insert, getting seat belts, and here's what's going on. So it was really cool. Sent Walt's plane back to get him, pick the two of them up. Then you're fending off all of the thoughts because we had Kenny Wallace kind of lined up in case Sam couldn't make it, but trying to get that all worked out. And I had worked with Kenny back at PPC and he's just, you know, Kenny's 100% going all the time, including talk and energy and everything. And I got Clara saying, hey, why is the car back out of tech? I said, well, we got some interior things we got to work through. And she had no clue. And afterwards she came to me and said, I didn't have an idea. I would never put you in a spot. I said, it's fine. But it's just conquering the process and making sure that things got done. And it was right up to the last minute, but we got it done and got him in there and got him secured. I think just maybe two to go. We didn't leave pit road on the pace laps. We did leave pit road before the race went green. So really, in retrospect, really proud of everybody. And it's a cool accomplishment to be able to make that happen from basically from 4:08 to what a 7:30 start. And the driver was in North Carolina as well as all of his stuff. So cool to have a group like Team Penske that has resources and the people to really dive in and conquer the process.
Yes. To remind race fans, that was race day of the summer Daytona race. And I'm also very impressed that you remember it was 4:08 PM. That's impressive.
That text scared the life out of me. That one's marked in forever that it was. Yeah. That one had me. I was like, I definitely was like, what did I do wrong? So it hit me, but pretty cool.
Jumping to 2013, here comes Joey. He gets hired by Roger. It's basically, as Joey would say, his second chance at Cup Series racing. Kind of a similar question. What do you remember about that time? And I ask because from Joey's perspective, he's always talked about for him and what it was like in his life at that point where he had heard, you don't deserve your ride at Joe Gibbs. You should lose your ride. And then here comes Roger, basically, as I said, giving him a second chance. So on your side, from a team side, when you hear, we've hired Joey Logano, he's going to be your driver. What were your thoughts?
Oh, I was stoked. I was really stoked. I actually was in on some of the conversations before it was completely done about, they had told me this is the route that we're pursuing. And I 100% supported it because my comment at the time was, I know he isn't performing in the 20 car, but you put him back in the Xfinity series in equal equipment to Kyle Busch and 8 out of 10 times he beats him. The kid's capable. We just got to give him the right environment. And that was part of what Joey and I talked about. We sat down and talked before it all got going, but I told him the same thing. I've watched you on Saturday. You beat everybody and you beat Kyle in similar equipment. So I feel like you just got to be in the right situation and that's what we'll create for you. So really cool when he came here. I think we had a lot of similar thoughts, a lot of our kind of processes and beliefs aligned and we marched forward and really created this core group that's still with me today or was to last weekend, right? But a lot of great years there of building things and building a successful path for both of us.
Is it accurate to say, Todd, that when Joey came in, you very much had to be the leader, but then over time, he very much developed into a leader of the race team and really kind of, I would say, maybe found himself and found his place in the sport?
Yeah, I joke a little bit. I call myself dad to start with. And there came a point, and it's much like I'm dealing with my kids now. There comes a point when they start to grow up and move out, right? But to start with, we led together, but I felt like I gave him my perspectives and tried to help sculpt, tons of talent there, and just how we continue the team camaraderie and pieces like that. And he was on board with every bit of it. But yeah, he grew into his own as he grew up and became confident. Confidence is a big deal in any sports. If you believe you're going to win, you're much more likely to. If you believe you're going to lose, you're much more likely to. So getting him in the right mindset and the right environment with the right people around him, I think he got to flourish into what I could see out of him when he was running those push cars against Kyle.
Yeah. And obviously, I would think the championship for you and your career will always be the biggest thing, that 2018 season, the big three and me. What a storyline that was.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. And really, the opportunity not only winning a championship, but to win the championship the year that Roger went into the Hall of Fame, so that Roger entered the Hall of Fame as a current champion, Carl. I talked to Joey about that on stage. That was one of the things that when I stood up on stage, I said, I know we're champions, but it's really cool that Roger gets to go in the Hall of Fame as the car owner champion, current one. So really cool. I think love Homestead. I love it to pieces. It's another one of those, I talked earlier about the wore out racetracks, and another place that'll fall off 3 seconds, the lap time and a tire run. You'll never run out of gas because you'll put tires on before you get there, and multiple grooves with the progressive banking. I think it's a spectacular racetrack. They really got it right when they got that 17, 18, 19, 20 degree banking progression that both Kansas and Homestead have. But love Homestead and love the fact that, you can build cars that are long run cars, you can build short run cars. And we had looked through the history and had a plan for how we felt the race would end, and it fell right directly in our lap.
A few more things, Todd, to wrap up with you. Through the years, I would imagine this sport and time on the road can age you physically, mentally, emotionally. What has it been like through 10 plus years of not just being in NASCAR, but being a crew chief, having one of the most stressful and important jobs in the business? How does it age you?
Yeah, that's a great question. One I haven't really thought about. I don't know. I don't like to think that I've aged much more than I need to, but I think to be in this environment that is really 7 days a week, you have to find your escapes. And, I couldn't do it without my wife, Amy, and just the support at home and her being as strong as she was. And to, really essentially be a single mother of two for how much time you're gone on the road, and always being flexible to what was going on in my work life. But then finding the things to do, to get away, to break away when you need to. We took a lot of family vacations right after the season ended just to kind of decompress and have some time together. And find the projects you like to work on. I'm a car guy. I love working on them. I've restored a few. I've typically got a car project going on at the house, and that's my escape to kind of get back to my normalcy. And that's probably the thing, that you've got to have something that is a break from the racing world to kind of keep yourself refreshed.
Classic muscle cars, right? I believe I heard.
Yeah. I did a frame off restoration of a 68 Corvette for my dad. It was a way too long a project, but it came out really nice, and got to give him that a little over a year ago. And in the process there, I did the car for my in-laws for their 50th anniversary. They had a picture of them in their 1962 Corvair for their engagement. So we recreated that picture for them on their 50th. That was pretty cool. But I got a Mercury Comet right now that's in my garage with the motor out of it and suspension out of it. That's going together. And yeah, I just love to tinker with cars. I'm a car guy. It's got a motor and wheels. I think I said that in the first part, but if it's got a motor and wheels, I'm into it. So, and sometimes I have wheels. I mean, boats are cool too, but I love to tinker. And that's one thing as a crew chief, you're not doing anymore. You're managing, you've got great people. I don't need to be doing it because I've got people that work for me that do everything better than I could, but you become a manager. So the opportunity to go home and become a worker is refreshing to me.
Going back to what you said a minute ago about this is a 7 day a week job, 365. We've, of course, the last 2 years we're racing under different policies and procedures and a different schedule. Remind race fans, what was it like in a normal, quote unquote, normal year? What did your week look like from Monday through Sunday and getting to the racetrack?
Yeah. If you go back pre-COVID, typically you come home to the racetrack Sunday night, And Monday we'd be at the shop as crew chiefs, you'd be at the shop Monday morning or meetings. We'd start meetings at 9 o'clock in the morning. And a lot of Monday was about debriefing from the weekend and you know, understanding the challenges we had, what we need to work on going forward, anything that we need to implement from the racetrack, that, you know, from inspection and environment of things we need to do for next week's cars. And Monday ends up being a kind of a summary of the weekend and communication back to shop. And Tuesday, all your mechanics come in and you're starting to work on your primary and backup cars and setups and K-rig work and seven post work and simulation work. So that's Tuesday and Wednesday. And then typically you try to get loaded up Wednesday night before you get the truck loaded, so I can get out of there Wednesday night so they can get the racetrack. Thursday ended up being travel day. So Thursday would be the one day that, like, my wife and I would go out to breakfast, you know, and then we'd hop on a plane at anywhere from noon to 4 o'clock that afternoon. So Thursday ended up being kind of your day to do what you wanted to do around the house. And, you know, the mechanics, I think they mowed the lawn on that day and things like that. And then you fly out Thursday and you're at the racetrack Friday for qualifying, start of the day Friday, practice and qualifying day. And then Saturday you go in for two practices and finishing up, getting prepared for the race, and then race on Sunday. So really in that schedule, Thursday morning until you departed, whether that be noon or 4 o'clock, that was your time away from the shop. But it's a passion. I mean, racing, people that work in racing, it's borderline a disease. I think we all have it and you can't get rid of it. And that's part of why when I made the announcement that I was going to step off the box, I'm going to step away from Penske as well, because I know that I can't be in this shop and not want to do what I did, you know, for the last 10 years. So got to make a break and go do something different.
Your two kids, what have they said over the years during your career? And then what was their reaction when you decided, okay, after this, I'm going to step away?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think early on when they were traveling with me, they were more into the racing thing. And I'd say the last 3 or 4 years, their lives have consumed themselves. And I mean, sometimes I have to tell them afterwards, I want to race, you know. My oldest Kaylee, she's a junior at Clemson, so she's got a lot going on in her life. And Ashlyn as well, she's got a lot going on there and just keeping up with all the stuff that she's involved in. So I think in ways they're excited about it, and they don't know me without having racing still going through my head. So I'm going to take a family trip here over the holidays and get away a little bit. And that's one of those things we used to do. So, and then be available. I'm going to spend some more time down in Clemson. I've got season football tickets. I'll make the next two games. I'll make sure I've got some time down there with Kaylee, and I look forward to those opportunities. And I think they're excited about it as well.
That's awesome. Two more questions. One last question on being a crew chief. I wanted to jump back to something. A lot, Todd, always gets talked about the competition with drivers and competition amongst drivers and how competitive drivers are. What about for crew chiefs? Is there competitiveness between crew chiefs, maybe when it comes to calling a race or your strategy worked versus another guy's strategy? Do you ever think of it that way?
Yeah, you're always wanting to. I mean, you're still part of the team, right? So you're still as competitive as can be. It's one of the things that, you want to win every race, and then you'll take every win you can out of it. And if it means that you can't win, you want to beat everybody I can. And that's everybody in your shop, then that's what you got to go after, you know. Or if that's, you know, it's tough because there's one winner and 39 losers, right? Every week. So you got to take the win of, if you finish fifth, that at least you weren't one of the 34 behind you. So yeah, it's competitive. And it's one of those things that it's a challenge too. Had this conversation, but you look at it from a friend standpoint, those are your peers, but you know, you work with, but Paul and I have the utmost respect for Paul. I think we work very well together within this building. And I mean, Jeremy as well, but Paul's been here for all my years as well, but I still want to beat him. So it's not really my friend. He is, but he's not, because it's a weird dichotomy, a weird makeup that you've got, because you always want to win. So the relationships are always, I think we do a really good job here at Team Penske of not hiding from each other. We are fully, like, transparent about what we're doing. And Travis Geisler makes sure that that's the message. And I think everybody's on board with that, has been since day one that I've been on the Cup side. But you still want to win. So if it means making a pick call better, then, or seeing the strategy differently, or how you made your choices off of the things that were there, those are the things you're trying to win with.
I will say that one of the things I greatly enjoy about Team Penske, and you said there about your relationships, you guys are all, you work close together, but everybody wants to win. You have your own team. So I'll say that the one thing that I've always loved about Team Penske as a whole is you guys race the heck out of each other. It doesn't matter that it's your teammate. You keep it clean, but those three drivers, they would race the heck out of each other. And I remember times watching races where people on social media be like, what are they doing racing that hard? And I'm like, that's what they do. That's what Team Penske does. You guys race the heck out of each other.
Yeah, and you saw that this weekend. I mean, I thought the 9 and 5 raced each other pretty hard all weekend for a championship as well. So we're one team, but green flag to checkered flag, we're all trying to figure out how we win. And at times there's challenges there, but I think as a whole, we race pretty hard, but we all understand each other and understand the greater good. So it's a balancing act, definitely is. And one that it's not stifled. So that's cool. We let the crews and drivers do their things and it's all for the greater good. And if anything malicious was done, that would be addressed. But when it's just racing, that's what we're here to do, right? Every team is there to win.
Todd, I was going to wrap up by asking what's next for you, but you really just hit on it there, because not only have you already told us that you were going to step away from being a crew chief, but you did say there you're stepping away from Penske. So you're really kind of reverting back into society and looking forward to more family time.
Yeah, I am. Don't know where that'll take me, but definitely going to step away from the competition side of NASCAR. And we've had this discussion, and honestly, Roger and Tim and Michael and Travis, very open and had great discussions about it in different ways. So, you know, Roger, the first time I talked to him about it, he wanted to know what I was going to go do and where I was going to be racing. I said, Roger, if I'm going to work in racing, I'm going to work for you. There's no place I'd rather be than here. Why would I leave what I feel is the best opportunity out there to do something different? So, and Travis has thrown a few things at me of, you know, what do you want to do and what can you do and stay here? And I need to break. Because I know personally my disease, as I called it earlier, would drive me right back to wanting to be in charge. So I'm going to spend some time. I've got other projects going on. I've got a couple of car projects in the house that'll tie up my time for a little while and let me clear my head and figure out what the path is forward from here. And I really don't have that totally clarified at this point, but I'm good with that. We're in a position where we can do that. And Amy's looking forward to having me around the house.
Yeah. Enjoy getting to figure it out. That's part of the fun, is getting to figure out what you want to do and having the time to do it. And who knows, maybe you'll update us all on social media. So we'll know you're still doing all right.
Yeah. The guys on, I do a Monday call on Sirius with Pete Pistone and Mike Bagley there. And they were bugging me today. They said, well, when you figure out what you're going to do, why don't you come back on and let everybody know? So I'll make sure people know where I'm at, but it's been a great, great ride. I'm just so appreciative of all the opportunities that have been given to me all the way and all the great people that have been part of it. It's, I've been blessed and can't leave from a better spot, and really look forward to watching this 12 team continue to grow and what they can do. I feel like Brian will be a champion, and I don't think it's far out.
Yeah. It's been a heck of a ride, Todd. It's been a successful ride. And I think I can speak for quite a few of my colleagues that you've also been wonderful, absolutely wonderful to work with, and very much a resource for a lot of us when it comes to needing stuff in the garage. So let me say that I appreciate that. I've always appreciated anything you've done for me, as well as taking so much time today to do this conversation. Thank you so much. And I wish you the absolute best in getting to enjoy life and family.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I look forward to where the sport goes. This next gen car is going to be pretty exciting for everybody to learn. I think there's a lot of opportunities here that next year will be pretty exciting to watch on the racetrack. So thanks for all that you're doing for the sport, and looking forward to just seeing what happens on track.
My thanks again to Todd for giving us some time late last week before he made his way out of Team Penske. As you heard him, he was wrapping up some things after 11 years with that team, but much longer in racing. What a career. Thank you again to Todd for wanting to come on and reflect. We waited until Todd was ready, And that's because he and Ryan were in the thick of the championship all the way down to the round of eight and went to Martinsville with a shot to advance to the championship four, but had a rough day, which I think surprised that team because of how good Ryan has been at Martinsville, but came up short, did not make it. So then Todd and Ryan wrapped up the season with a top five finish at Phoenix. And again, Todd is now off to spend time with family. So thank you again to Todd for making sure that he sat down with us and fulfilled that promise when he was ready. I greatly appreciate it. And as I told him, I truly will miss working with him because he's always been very accommodating. I'm sure some of you have heard him on Mondays on SiriusXM and doing hits with Pete Pistone and Mike Badley for the morning drive and just sharing so much insight, not only into his team, but anything that was going on in racing. So thank you, Todd, for not only joining me, but again, always being accessible and open with all of us in racing. And thank you to Kyle Zimmerman for putting that on Todd's calendar and making sure he was up to it. And again, we fulfilled it once Todd was ready. So thank you, Todd, and thank you, Kyle. Let me thank all of you for listening, of course, clicking and listening along every week. You know I appreciate it. You heard me mention at the top Patreon. You can find the link to that if you're curious of what that is in the show description of this episode, or go to Google and type in patreon.com/Kelly Crandall. It is another way for you to get additional content for the podcast, as well as a way to support me, which I always appreciate. So everything from seeing my show notes and how I put episodes together to the guest lineup as I continue to fill that out. We're going deep into the off season this year. I normally don't do that, but for those of you who are on Patreon, I want to make sure you're getting your money's worth. So we're going to keep going strong here all through the winter and right into the 2022 season. So if you join Patreon, you can already see the lineup because I have shows built out all the way through December and I'm already working on January. So that's a reason to sign up, as well as many more. So please go check that out. Again, patreon.com/Kelly Crandall. And while you're doing that, please leave a rating and review. I hope you've hit the subscribe button by now if you are joining us for the first time or joining us just recently, having caught up on some of the most recent episodes in the archives. Leave a rating, leave a review. You can find me on social media. My Twitter handle is at Kelly Crandall. That's always the easiest and best way to engage with me about this episode or any that you've heard recently. Or you can go to Instagram to see some content there, whether it's from the podcast or just my adventures all over the racing world. And there is a public Facebook page if you would like to get your information there. That's where you'll find links to the podcast as well as links for racer.com. And it's my name all across all three platforms, so you shouldn't have to work too hard to find those. Again, at Kelly Crandall on Twitter, at Kelly Crandall on Instagram, and if you search my name on Facebook, as I said, remember it is the public page that you are looking for. All right, that's it. Let me get out of here. As I said, Bob Tasca will be next week as the NHRA season has just wrapped up. We chatted with Bob a couple weeks ago, but it will still be very relevant as he takes us inside what it's like to be a funny car driver and the day job that he has during the week selling Fords. Really great conversation with Bob. So that is coming next week, I promise. I will see you then right here on the Racing Writers Podcast.